give me my time, Tom?
Yes, sir. I'll be timing you.
And so, like, what time do I go to? If it's 10 after 9.
Okay, let's see.
So then I got my mark.
Let's see here. Normally, let's see here.
Mm-hmm. So by 9:40.
9:45.
Okay, 9:45. Okay, good. I'll watch that. I've had to become an expert of time when I'm preaching. I preach in churches all over the country, and it's always funny because, you know, sometimes you have 20 minutes, sometimes you have 15, sometimes take an hour and a half, brother. You know, so it's I've had to get used to time. So how are we this morning? It's good to hear about your story. That's awesome. Yeah. We're doing good. Cheryl and I have a friend in town. That's actually why I need to scooch. I just need to kind of be with him a little bit. He's from Hawaii, and he is a leader in Youth of the Mission, and he's Samoan. So if you see a big Samoan guy walking around here today, and he's actually an ali'i, which is the Hawaiian or Samoan word for chief. So he has to go back to his village in Samoa every year and summon the village and kind of make decisions. So yeah, he's about 50, 51 years of age, and his wife, Julie, was on a ministry team that Sean and I led in Hawaii for many years, and so it's fun to have him here. We do a trip every February to Hawaii, and it's not. Let me give you a different perspective of Hawaii, because you know usually in Hawaii you think of coconuts and palm breezes and hula girls and all this, and let me just tell you a whole different paradigm. So do you know that if you were to take a globe, kind of spin it till you find Jerusalem, all right, here's Jerusalem on the globe, where Jesus stood and said, you know, that we'd preach the gospel, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and outermost parts of the earth. And then if you were to go like this and walk around the globe, the exact opposite side is Hawaii. So Hawaii is literally, biblically, a slice of the uttermost parts of the earth. It's the most isolated place in the whole world. The closest continent is the U.S. It's 2,500 miles away. So it's like a 4.5 to 5 hour flight from, say, L.A. And it gives you a whole different perspective of Hawaii. And on the Big Island of Hawaii, where Cheryl and I lived for 7 years, is one of the greatest moves of God in the history of the world. And I'm not going to go into the whole story, but it's a remarkable, remarkable story of a young Hawaiian boy whose family he saw slaughtered. And he became an orphan, and he ended up on a ship from Hawaii in New England, sitting on the steps of Yale University, weeping because no one was giving him learning, as he said it. And at the time in New England, they thought people from the islands were like savages. They could never know God. They could never learn stuff. And his name was Opukahaia. And Opukahaia ended up giving his life to Jesus and not only learned English along with his Hawaiian, but Latin, Hebrew, and Greek, became the first Hawaiian Christian. And as he's in the process of being trained to bring the gospel back to Hawaii, because they at the time it was human sacrificing, cannibalism, all kinds of stuff. And so he wanted to bring the gospel back. He dies of typhus fever at 26. And a little booklet is printed about his life that goes throughout New England. And a year and a half later, 17 people decide they're going to go. And all they knew of was the human sacrificing. It'd be like if Steve came up, Pastor Steve, and he said, "Hey guys, we've been seeking the Lord, and as a congregation, we feel called to start sending teams into ISIS." Like, imagine how you'd feel about that's how these people felt, but they went. And what they didn't know was God was preparing a way. And all that had fallen apart, that religion had fallen apart by the time the missionaries landed there. And within 40 years, 80 to 90% of what we know as Hawaii today was Christian. It's an unbelievable story of revival and the move of God. So what we do is Cheryl and I take people over and we go to those places over 4 days and we have local Hawaiian people and historians tell the stories. And it's an opportunity for you to say, what are the ways of God, which is my topic today, what are the ways of God that we can take from that we can apply to our own nation that's desperately in need of a move of God? And then people go enjoy Hawaii for 5-6 days. So it's a really remarkable trip. So anyway, so Vi, we had a meeting about it last night, and so Vi was in and contributed to that, which was great. So now you've heard a little background, too, on Cheryl and I. We met when we were both 19. We were missionaries with Youth of the Mission there in Hawaii. And Cheryl served in Thailand in the refugee camps, like when some of you may remember this in Cambodia. The Khmer Rouge came in the late 70s, early 80s, and destroyed the people, and the Cambodians fled to Thailand, and they were in refugee camps. Well, Cheryl worked as a dental assistant in the refugee camps there. And I did campus ministry throughout Hawaii, and so spent 7 years doing that. So I love the Polynesian people, the Hawaiians and Tongans and Fijians and Samoans. So Shel and I met. We got married where we were missionaries, and our son Ryan, I'll come back to my kids here in a minute. My son Ryan was born there, and then our daughter Malia, which is Hawaiian for Mary, was born when we were living in Minnesota. So we got here to Tennessee. August will be 25 years that this has been home for us. And so for my kids who are 32 and 29, it's been home for them. Cheryl, this is better to show you than to try to explain it to you. Cheryl is known as the Kona coffee artist. She paints with Kona coffee. And so here, let me explain the process to you, and then I'll show you some pictures here or paintings. So she makes coffee, Kona coffee, which is made there on the Big Island of Hawaii where we lived. It's the only place where it's grown. It's one of the probably top five most desired coffees in the world. And what Cheryl does is she'll take the Kona coffee, she'll make coffee like you would, but then she'll stick it on the stove and boil it till it becomes a sludge. And then when it becomes a sludge, she'll put it in a little cup and she'll stick it in the fridge, and that becomes her watercolor. So when she wants to paint, she a little water, a little coffee, and she paints. So, for example, take a look at this is the first church in Hawaii called Makuaikawa, and that's all with coffee. Okay, and so this is her thing. I mean, my stick men have issues, so it's like, you know. So in Hawaii, one of the big honored animals is the turtle, and in Hawaiian it's called a honu, H-O-N-U. And so Cheryl will paint these pictures. Isn't that remarkable? Let me show you two other honus that she's done. So here's...
Wow.
So her attention to detail, like if you look at... Like, look at that. If you're snorkeling, this is what you see, you know? Here's another one that she recently did. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And so it's all done with coffee. And then she's done this one here of Tennessee, kind of a barn.
Oh.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
And then here's a kind of an old lantern. But look, like, if you look at the... Yeah. But, like, look at the wood. I always just go, how did you do that? You know, because I can't.
Does she sell those?
She does. Yeah, so she was in a gallery in Hawaii for a year, and we just pulled things out of there, now kind of going a different direction. But if you go to konacoffeeartist.com, in about a week, all her stuff will be updated. And here's something. I forgot about this, but I'll tell you about this. So you know how in Franklin here we do the art crawl? Have you ever seen that? So June 3rd, which I think is 2 weeks from last Friday night, they do an art crawl, and she's down at the bank. She'll be in the bank at, what's the name of the bank? No, it's the opposite. So in other words, as you're coming down Franklin Road into Franklin, before you get to the roundabout and before you get to Baskin and Robbins on your right, there's a bank on your right. Is it a Regions? Yeah, Regions might be on your left. So this is as you're coming into town from Nashville, it's on your right. I forget what bank it is, but anyway, that's where she'll be. So if you have an interest in just going out for a stroll, she'll have some of her artwork there, prints and originals and all that on that night. So yeah, you would enjoy it. It's really quite remarkable. So that's my bride of 34 years, and as we met as missionaries and have served together in missions and ministry for many, many years. My son Ryan is 32, and Ryan works at Kane Prime. If any of you know where that, it's in the Gulch. It's one of our most expensive restaurants. He had one of the Titans players come in, and his little family after a game had a meal, and he said, Dad, the bill was $1,250, which is not unusual. And he left Ryan a $750 tip. Shout to the Lord. I mean, it's like, wow. Yeah. And so it's not unusual for him to run into actors and actresses and artists and athletes and politicians, and that's kind of the clientele down there. So Ryan does that, and his wife Kendall is a trauma care nurse at Vanderbilt Hospital. So she deals with a lot of the hard stuff, and very steady. Like if something's happened to me, I want Kendall around because she knows what's going on and how to handle stuff. And they have brought into the world our first grandchild. So we have a 19-month-old grandson by the name of Baron David, and he has ruined our lives in a wonderful way. And so we've absolutely enjoyed being grandparents. We're with him about... because of Ryan and Kendall's schedules, 2 days a week, they kind of cross. And so Cheryl will go over about 3 in the afternoon. and I'll join her about 4:30, and we're there till about 8:30 at night. And so I get to personally spend about 8 to 10 hours a week with my grandson. And I'm purposely doing that. I'm cutting aside some other things because I really want to invest in my grandkids. So that's a great joy to us. My daughter Malia is 29, and she just got married 3 weeks ago. And I had the privilege of walking her down the aisle. And then when I got down the aisle, Cheryl joined us, and I went up and did the welcome and the prayer. And then I said, who gives this woman to be married to this man? And I went down and said, her mother and I. And that's Malia's personality, too. So we just had fun with it. And she married a guy by the name of Eric, who's a wonderful, wonderful young man that we're very grateful for in our family. And Eric works at Dell, and Malia is an esthetician, so she deals skincare kind of stuff. So they live about 45 minutes away from us. Ryan and Kendall live right off of Moore's Lane, so they're about 15, 20 minutes. So we're really grateful that they're here. We know this may not always be the case, so we're very grateful for right now. So Sean and I spent years in missions, and then we moved here, have pastored a number of years. I lead an organization here that's called Lion Share that focuses on making disciple makers. So I'm out maybe some average month, 8 to 10 days a month. Sometimes it's three times a month. Sometimes I'm gone 16, 18 days a month, traveling and speaking and helping people, leaders and churches working on disciple making. How do we reproduce the things of God in people who then can do the same? That's what the last commandment of Jesus was make disciples. And what he meant with that was don't pour into a person and then you're done. Pour into them until you've helped them learn how to pour into someone else. That's what it means. And that's usually where we get stuck. We just stop with them. They're good. And I'm challenging people to say, no, we want to keep going till you know that person knows how to pour into someone effectively. That's obeying the last command of Jesus. So the organization I lead focuses on that. So that's a little of Dave and Cheryl's kind of world, what we do. I'm about 10 hours a week here at Grace leading the guys. And the strategy we have with the guys is me to pour into some of our leaders who are then helping me lead with the guys. And I pinch hit from time to time for Steve in the pulpit. And it's just been a real privilege to be able to be here at Grace. So the topic today is the ways of God. And do you guys know what page this is? Because I don't have your note. 57. And I know Myron, you know, Myron always tells me, hey, share your heart on this, and you can they can plug in the answers, you know, Myron. if you look at foundations for the ways of God, you know, you're going to see tons of scriptures here, you know, related to the things of God. And what I'd like you to do is go to that portion, you can tell me what page it is, that says four realities of walking in the ways of God. Do you see that? Is that the next page? Four realities of walking in the ways of God. Let's see. Why walk in the ways of God? Myron changed it. Yeah, why walk in the ways of God? He's got to send me the updated notes. Why walk in the ways of God? And if you'll just look at that scripture there for a moment, Exodus 33. Do you see that? Okay, good. It says, if you are pleased with, this is Moses. This is Moses talking to the Lord. If you are pleased with me, teach me your ways so I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember that this nation is your people. He was speaking there of Israel. The Lord replied, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. All right? So just look at these four things here. The first, I think you have a blank there, should say the pleasure. The pleasure of knowing God from the scripture is so I might know you. Like, you guys, do you understand how excited God is to know us? I mean, the only way I can relate to it in these days of my life is I could go over every day to my son's Ryan's house. I feel like a third grader. Can Baron come out and play? Because it's not hard for me to pursue my grandson. Think of that 1,000 times magnified is how God feels about us. Like, do you understand when you get up in the morning, he's pursuing you. He wants to be with you. And the pleasure of the ways of God is that we get to know him. And so when we talk about the ways of God are how God does stuff. The character of God is who he is. The ways of God is how he does stuff. All right? And so think about it. When you get to know a person, you kind of become familiar with their house. Oh, yeah, they're a fast driver. Oh, yeah, man, they always pay their bills on time. Oh, they're always a little late. You know, and we get to know each other's ways. And as you get to know each other's ways, you get to know the person, okay? And that's what Moses is saying here. Teach me your ways that I might know you. And one of the real pleasures of the ways of God is we get to know his character. We get to know what he's really like. So when you pursue knowing the ways of God in the scriptures, how God does stuff, you get to know him. Okay? So the second one there is the affirmation. The affirmation of the ways of God is God says back to Moses, or Moses talking, so that I will find favor with you. When you walk in God's ways, you can observe an unusual grace upon your comings and goings in life. God's favor and blessing is released upon your life and your relationships, your roles in society as you walk in the ways of God. When you walk in God's ways, you notice an unusual favor on your life because you're doing it God's way. All right. So, for example, artists, you know, just being here in Nashville, you as a pastor, you end up walking alongside artists who need help. And when they're seeking the Lord about things, like there was a particular American Idol candidate who was a finalist. And when she was done, I met with her and I said, so like, what's your next step? Well, like, where do you go from here? Like, I was asking, are you staying in music? What are you doing? And she said, no, I'm staying in music and I need to get a manager. And so I knew it was a moment for me to be able to speak into her life the ways of God. And I said, so how are you going to go about doing that? And she said, well, I'm not sure. And I said, well, let me tell you what most artists do is they look for, like, who's the famous ones? Who brings in the most cha-ching, you know? And I said, can I tell you what a woman of God would do? Trying to lean her towards the ways of God. She said, yes, I'd love to know. I said, a woman of God will get on her face and she'll seek God. And she'll ask Jesus to reveal who this person is. And she'll get counsel from godly people. And you know what? She did that. And, you know, here in Nashville, if you have a manager beyond 2 years, it's usually been a good gig because there's, you know, this kind of stuff that goes on. She's had her manager now for a decade. He's a godly man that actually cares more about her as a person than her career. How did that happen? She walked in the ways of God. And when you walk in the ways of God, God shows up and he leads and he guides. And the problem is, you guys, is oftentimes we find ourselves just walking in the ways of the world or in the habits of our lives. You know, the Bible says, like, the ways of God as a husband is for me to lay down my life for my wife. That's what the ways of God says, which means I need at times to put aside the things that I think are important to serve her. Like, that's supposed to be the norm. Well, when you walk in those ways, God blesses a marriage, all right? And so that's something as a husband. I want to walk in the ways of God. Remember, the ways of God is how God does stuff. Remember, help me here. He says, if you want to be great in the kingdom, you must become the what of all? Servant of all. Well, that goes so against the way of the world. The world is, no, you keep shoving people down and climb the ladder as high as you can. No, the ways of God are, if you want to be a servant or want to be great in his kingdom, you serve. You serve, all right? The Bible says God opposes the proud and he gives grace to the
humble.
So if you really want to experience a measure, like incredible grace in your life, you choose humility. You choose humility. Humility is a willingness to be known for who you really are. So that means if in a conversation you were wrong and say, you know what, I was wrong. And sometimes something harder to say, you were right, all right? But the ways of God are you choose humility. Humility doesn't mean you're a doormat. Humility means I recognize the strengths of who I am. Like part of humility would be like if, let's say you invited me to your home for dinner and you're just showing me your home and there's just like one little kind of family room area. You have your TVs there. But I look on this wall and you have like 120 tennis trophies. And they're not the I participated, you know. They're like trophies, all right. And there is like first place and grand champion. And I'm just going... And you know, and you have this huge wall, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, dude, you never told me that you were a humility would look like this. Yeah, I'm pretty good at tennis, and I really enjoy it. Because what you're acknowledging is who God's made you. Humility, a willingness to be known for who you really are. It's also in your strengths. And that's why, you know, it's important for you to recognize the strengths God's given you. So when you hear a place of service in the body here, hey, we're looking for somebody that has a real heart to go into the hospitals to visit people, mercy heart to people. I want that. I'll do that. But if you can't acknowledge that about you, you're waiting for some pastor to say, I think you're mercy, or, you know, you're going to wait a long time. All right. And so humility is being willing to be known for who you really are in your strengths and in your weaknesses. Oh, man, I'm having a problem with my tongue. I just say stuff I should say. Oh, my thought life, I'm not doing good there. That's also humility. So when you're getting together and someone says, you know, how are you? In our American culture, you know, that's just, it's it's a whole different thing, isn't it? Because how are you? It's like, could you imagine if you weren't doing well and someone said, hey, how are you? Hey, I got a half an hour. I'd like to talk to you. You know, we'd go, no, don't time out. I just meant to say hi, you know. But you want to be able to have some relationships in your life where when someone says, how are you, you can, in humility, say, really crappy. Man, I had this happen and this happen. Or, you know, like your week this week. Man, it was a tough week. Because we could suck it up and say, fine. But then it becomes a mask, right? So I'm not saying everybody that you meet, you should unload on. But what I am saying is part of the ways of God is there's a transparent heart that you can say, man, I'm not so good this week. I'm struggling with X, Y, Z. See? Humility. And so humility draws the grace of God to us. And so that's what I mean by the ways of God. The Bible says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So if I want to be wise, I need to learn how to fear the Lord more in my life. It's not just smarts from knowledge, it's wisdom that God imparts to your life when you fear Him. So when you read the scriptures, you want to be looking at, okay, what is God's ways behind this? So the ways of God is kind of like popping the hood. You know, you read the stories and God defeated Egypt and Israel, you know, left in the Exodus. Well, that's the works of God. And we need to celebrate those. But what God really wants is, come here. And He wants to pop the hood so you can look under the hood to see what are the ways. How did He do that? Okay. So the ways of God are the hows of God, how He does stuff. All right. Look at the third one, the promise. The promise is this. God, what does God say when Moses said, teach me your ways that I may know you? He says, my presence will go with you. Like, who doesn't want that, right? And it's interesting portion there because look at that little bullet point, the last one under there. What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth but your presence? And I get challenged with that today. It's like I want in my life, and I'm not there, but I want, God, I want your presence in my life and through my life so to be so rich and real that when people encounter me by saying hi or when I'm ministering to someone, whatever the case may be, that they got a little touch of the heart of God and a little taste of His ways from this little jar of clay. Why? Because I love this phrase. Moses says the thing that distinguishes us from all the people of the earth is His presence is with us. I love that. All right? But I also am challenged by it to say, Lord, have I given you room? Do I yield in my life to more and more of your presence in my life? And one of the ways that God's presence increases in our lives is when we walk in His ways. Okay? Let me show you the fourth one here is the gift. Look at what the gift of walking in the ways of God is. He doesn't say only my presence goes with you, but He gives us something every one of us craves. I will give you rest. So what that means is instead of striving, like just think of your life since January this year. How often there's a striving to make things happen and pushing and we gotta, and there's all this. When the Lord wants us to walk out of a place of peace. Sometimes we're passionate and we're pursuing stuff, but there's still peace. And He says, my presence will give you rest. I will cause your heart to settle down. I'll cause your mind from racing to be at peace. And one of the promises, when you walk in the ways of God, you can be assured that His presence is with you. You can be assured that He's going to bless you. Now, He said, my presence is with you always. And so that's a truth. But there's also a side of knowing His nearness. There's a difference between knowing and knowing, right? And when you walk in the ways of God, He promises to give you peace. So when you look at things, principles in Scripture, and you say, okay, what is the ways of God here? Like the laying down my life for my wife. Because I have tried to do that perfectly, no. Cheryl could come in here and confess my sins, all right, to you today. But putting my heart in that place to lean into that, guess what? It causes my marriage to walk in peace. Okay? And I don't have to be saying, well, Cheryl, you aren't doing your part. Have you ever noticed this? When a husband leads well in his home, his wife follows in his footsteps. That's how it's supposed to go. All right? And so my role, if I can just focus, I don't need to worry about her role. I just need to focus on, I need to lay down my life for her. Am I doing that? Okay? And when you do that, you get this benefit of rest, of peace. No, I can stand here today and say to you, there's nothing between my wife and I today of 34 years. We're at peace. And if there's ever an issue, we deal with that issue quickly. Why? Because we want to. Because walking in God's ways means we humble ourselves. Honey, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. Cheryl will say, honey, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I forgive you. And we move forward. So walking in the ways of God allows us to experience the pleasure of God in His presence, allows us to know the affirmation of God. That we find favor with Him. It lets us know the promise and the gift. All right. So I just want to introduce that to you, and what I want to do is just take. We've got about 10 minutes here, and I want to move this over with me. That's what I want to do, so I can use this whiteboard. And I want to show you something that is an example of the ways of God that I think you can apply today. All right? So let me draw these circles like this. You can draw these as well and fill them in with me. So one of the things that I've tried to help people with because of my focus on disciple making is how do people actually get transformed? Like for real. Like, okay, here I am today. How 3 months from today can I see that I've allowed the work of God to be real in my life and I'm a different guy in whatever area it would be? And there's a process. I call this the process of transformation, but it's based on how God does stuff, so His ways. So let's start with the end one here. And I'm going to put the letter T that represents the word transformation. Like if this is the end here, transformation, how does God transform me? How does God use me to transform someone else? Like, have you ever tried to transform somebody else? Have you ever just known that's a big, as we'd say in baseball, that's a big swing and a miss? It doesn't work. All right? It just, you can cajole and you can manipulate and you try to, and it just doesn't work. And you get frustrated, you get more angry and ticked off with them, and it just doesn't work. All right? But here's what I want you to see. So if this is the size of an apple seed, we all have apples, and when you look at an apple seed, it's so tiny. And even though we have no weight, no authority, no ability to change anybody, God does. And He can take something the size of an apple seed and not only create another apple, but a tree that has many apples. And not only a tree with many apples, but an orchard. And not only an orchard, thousands of orchards can come from one little seed. That's God's transforming power. And you and I've experienced it when we gave our life to Jesus. We were transformed from literally, had we died this week, we'd have not known Jesus. We'd have spent an eternity away from Him. But because of what He's done, He's transformed things in us. And now we know, hey, if your parents had something happened, you knew where they would be. Why? Because Jesus had transformed their life. Okay? So I just want you to realize you do nothing here. God does it all. He does all the transfer. So He does the heavy lifting. Okay? Then let me come up to here. I'm going to put the letter R for the word revelation. Now let me explain this to you. I don't mean like the book of the Bible, Revelation, although it gives the meaning of this. But in the New Testament, when you use the word revelation, it means the parting of curtains. Okay? So think of being at a school play. And there you are, with your son, your daughter, niece, nephew, grandchild, sister, brother. And you're sitting there in the junior high play. You're there in the theater seating, and there's the stage with the, have you ever noticed it's always navy blue, black, or burgundy, shaggy curtains, right? And you're sitting there, and 5 minutes before, you're talking, somebody does the light flicker thing, and it's, sit down, be quiet, and we all sit down and be quiet. 5 minutes before, you have no idea what's behind the curtain. No idea. 3 minutes, 1 minute, 1 second before. But then all of a sudden when the curtain opens and you see there's an old Western town, a spaceship, a Hawaiian island, or whatever, it's like that is the meaning of revelation. I did not see. Now I see. Revelation is different than a fact. Okay? A fact would be, isn't it awesome in the book of Esther? God does all this stuff and yet His name's not even mentioned once. That's a fact. Revelation is when God reveals something to you that hits your heart. God has purposely pulled back there. So let's just say you're sitting in Pastor Steve's sermon on a Sunday and he's talking about our hearts being clean and all of a sudden in our relationships and all of a sudden the Lord reveals to you, my relationship with my dad is horrible and I'm bitter about it. I've never done anything with it. That's revelation. It's God pulling back the curtain. It's showing either guidance or it's showing sin or it's showing, relationships where that need to be mended. And God, that's revelation. God's revealing something to you. And do you guys know we have habits? And that's one of the reasons I want to show you this, because the ways of God is being responsive to that. That's how you grow. But we have habits of doing this and shoving it down. God's revealed. Like, I could stand here and in total truth say to you, I know for a fact I have more revelation than I've actually obeyed. I know that. Am I happy about that? No. But I know God's revealed more things to me than I've actually obeyed in my life. And that's, so I don't need a bunch of new revelation. I just need to obey what I already got. Okay? And so think of when Jesus was with the guys and he said, hey, who do people say that I am? Remember that? And they say, well, some say you're John the Baptist. Come back. Some say you're Elijah. Some say you're one of the other prophets. And then he says, who do you say that I am? And who pipes up?
Peter.
And he says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, right? Listen to Jesus' response. Flesh and blood has not revealed, here's that word, revealed that to you, but my Father who's in heaven. So the other thing you and I need to know about revelation is flesh and blood can't make this happen. You can't make someone see it. Only God can. Because have you ever like talked to your blue in the face? Don't you see it?
No.
You know, they don't see it. All right? And it's because God is the only one that can do this. He parts the curtains. So guess what? When someone doesn't understand, how can you pray? Lord, I just ask that you'd bring them revelation in Jesus' name. I ask that you'd clear things spiritually so they can see. Because that's what begins the process of transformation. You have to see it for yourself. It's like the alcoholic who says, I don't know what you're talking about. They don't see. But all of a sudden, when they're in a 12-step program and they see it, then, it's only when you see it, can transformation begin its process. And let me just be honest with you. I know this might sound weird coming from a pastor, but I know I'm so deceived today that I don't even know where I'm deceived. You understand what I'm saying by that? Because there's areas in my life I've grown this year that I didn't know I was blind to because God revealed. And do you understand your whole life is coming out of darkness into light? We're followers of Jesus, but the habits and the thoughts and the attitudes and the words and the actions are all being transformed over our entire lifetime. They're not just done. Oh, how I wish that was so. But it's not. And so I know there's areas that I am deceived in. I don't want to be. I didn't even know I was until I bump into truth and I go, oh my gosh, I never saw that. You understand what I'm saying? And that's how we live our lives. And so God's constantly trying to reveal things to us. And what's our response? Okay, so God does this and God does this. This is what you and I do. Obedience. Obedience. When God reveals something to us, it's not meant to be negotiated. It's meant to be obeyed. So when God shows you that your relationship with your dad is awful, why did he show you that? Oh, just for fun. No, he showed you that because he wants you to have transformation in the relationship. But you guys, here's what happens. When you're in between here, so let's say God's revealed something to you, there's two choices, obedience or disobedience. There's only two. Remember Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, he said, those who hear my words, they had revelation, and obey them is like a what? A wise man who builds his house on the rock. When the storms comes, it'll stand. Why? Because they've internally been built in the truth. But the premise for the second dude is the same. He who hears my words, it's the same. They've had revelation, but they do not do it. They're like a foolish man who builds his house on the sand. And when the waves come, man, it's great. It'll be the crash. And you guys, this is often where we live, right here. All right? And when God reveals something to us, see, this is the ways of God, how he transforms. When he reveals something and we obey, transformation comes. Okay? What's between here and here? Some of you know God said something. I'm obeying. There's one word, trust. You have to trust God to make whatever he transformation, whether it's in you or through you, to happen. Let me close by sharing a story with you here of something that's just recently happened to me. I try to walk about 6 days a week. I walk about 4 miles a day. And it's a great time in the early morning. It's quiet. It's prayer time. It's walk, a little exercise, all that stuff. So one day I'm walking. I pass this mother with her 22-year-old daughter. It's a colder day. She's got her cup hands wrapped around her coffee cup. And I just said, good morning. And I keep walking. And about 15, 20 paces by, I felt, I kind of make it feel like this to me, kind of the nudge inside of the Lord, I want you to talk to them. And I'm continuing to walk. It's like now, and I said, no, I just felt like I was to continue my walk. And I got to the corner about 3 blocks and turned around, and I just felt like, I said, Lord, if I really heard something from you on this, because I don't even know what you want me to say, but I will stop. if they're still there by the time I catch up, I'm assuming this is you. So I'm getting some revelation from the Lord. The Lord's saying, I want you to do this. So sure enough, when I get to them, they had not turned into their home or anything, and I just stopped and turned. I said, I already know. I said, good morning. That's all I needed to say. Because the girl, unbeknownst to me, takes her coffee cup like this, gives it to her mother, and she walks really close to my face. And she starts crying. And I'm going, okay, I guess I was supposed to stop, but I have no idea why. And she says, you have no idea, but she said, I go to your church. And she said, last Sunday, this was last fall, when I spoke on the hearing the voice of God. The first session was on the character of God. The next week was practical ways of how to hear God. She said, she had had some bad circumstances happen in her life. And she said, I've been asking God to reveal his character. She said, last Sunday, you spoke on that. And all of a sudden, that little moment turned into mom and daughter and I huddled on the sidewalk praying together. And she sent me an email several weeks later saying, you have no idea how that moment of you stopping in obedience transforms my family. You guys, it's not only being transformed inside, it's transformation through you. When God reveals for you to do something and you obey him, trusting him in the midst of it, transformation not only comes in you, but through your life. Okay? It's learning to step out and obedience to God. Not the fear of man and what people are going to think, but fearing God, really realizing there's something much bigger at stake. So that's an example for you of how God works in what I call the process of transformation. Okay? So I will be done because we're at that time. So, okay.